heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
You know, if you recall back in the early days of the Trump presidency, it was very strategic. Some of the people he was meeting with, that Trump met with, this is early 2017 now, if you'll dial it back there. Mar-a-Lago, that's where he met Xi Jinping in China. But he also had that interesting trip to Saudi Arabia. He met Shinzo Abe, very strategic players he was meeting in those first few months as the administration was just taking shape. Well, the meeting with Xi, a lot of people were wondering why that was. You see, I think Trump knew, you got to remember, he ran on this whole trade thing. He realized that China, amongst others as well, not to mention Mexico, Canada, and just about every other country, had been eating our lunch and dinner, for that matter, for a while. Trade was upside down. No administration had really dealt with the problem. And we had deficits everywhere. I mean, this was not a surprise or a secret to get a different outcome. Nobody really was changing that. You know, you think about American exceptionalism, and you think of what this country's gone through, people, and you think, you know, what we would be like if it wasn't level in an even playing field across the board. I always think of that. You know, what kind of an advantage? I mean, we have a disadvantage and we still talk about American might or American exceptionalism, right? Well, you know, but it's not always an equal level playing field, is all I'm saying, you know? And, you know, China is one of those relationships that, again, like a lot of these strategic relationships, you know, they're not really an ally, clearly. We like to think they're not an enemy. So what are they exactly? How do they fit into our geopolitical world here and, you know, where the United States sits right now? So Trump meets with Xi back in April 2017 in Mar-a-Lago. And you remember that's when he ordered, in fact, the missiles were launching to Syria, as I recall now. And remember, that was quite the thing. Everybody was stunned that Trump would do that on the spot. Some people thought maybe it was planned. Others said, well, not so much. In any event, this was a new president in the Oval Office, and he made a strategic decision with one of the biggest leaders in his grasp right there in his presence. And he makes a very strategic decision. Think about that. Well, how does that fit into all of this, you know? Well, he laid down some of those early relationships with Xi. And they were, again, very strategic. And he created this bond friendship. Now, friends, when you look at relationships that a United States president has with any foreign leader, it almost always comes back to that personal relationship. I know this sounds strange. It sounds almost a little weird. But it always comes, they have to like each other, the leaders. Think about that. I mean, you think about, well, but you've got a whole country at stake here. You have a big relationship at stake. You have progress at stake. You've got potential war at stake. You've got trade at stake. You've got, but it always comes back to the relationship between those leaders. We've seen it time and time again in history. When leaders like each other, when they respect each other, you tend to get more out of it, clearly. There's a mutual respect there, you know? And of course, everybody was talking Russia, 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 Russia. That's been the narrative for as long as Trump has been in the White House and even before. In fact, you bring it back to Romney and Obama when he called out Russia, remember? And they had that whole setup at the debate, remember that? But it's all been about Russia and Russia and Russia. In the meantime, China is giggling on the side and they're loving all this attention on Russia. They're not fools there, people. I've told you many times before, China plays the long-term game really, really, really well. Our dumb politicians, not so much. They don't play anything long-term. They only play to the next election. So everything they're doing is strategic so that they can get reelected with whenever that's up. I mean, that's all they're looking for. And so they're not playing long-term games here. So again, as we see now with Xi, the president lays down the markers and he builds this relationship up, this friendly relationship with Xi. probably the best relationship that we've had with China, maybe period, is certainly all the way back to President Richard Nixon when he visited China back in 72. I mean, he opened the door to that whole thing because we had no relationship with them before then, at least since the communist government came into power in 1949. You know, that was all done. There was nothing going on until Nixon opened that up. You know, Nixon still doesn't get the credit for that. And a lot of his foreign policy success, he's never got any credit for that. But, you know, again, Trump realized China was going to be a challenge. And the one thing, again, with his art of a deal, he realized he's going to have to deal with someone like Xi. And he met with Xi up front because he knew that Xi was going to be a challenge. Let's call it a challenge, people, right? Trade was first and foremost on the mind, but it's not the only thing, people. It's also the military might and the military buildup. You know, again, as we've talked about, you bring it to the South China Seas, the islands there. You know, that was a big how to do in the Obama administration when China, you know, said, well, we're not going to put any military weapons or missiles or anything else on those islands. We just want to create some islands. Well, you'd have to be a fool not to think what they were going to do, people. They, you know, the Chinese are not necessarily looking to get some sun out there on the islands, are they? I mean, that's a hell of a lot of investment, and to be building all that sand and bringing out there and building islands. I mean, by the time they're done, like I said, it'll probably be a continent. But now they've got missiles and weapons and everything else in the South China Seas. And that's to really create to hold power there in that particular area. It's very strategic in nature what's going on. So you have the military might over here. You've got the trade relationship over here. And China looks at all of it. Now, China is the little country that could. You know, it's a little country that could. Not too little people, obviously. It got a whole lot of people there. And the size and scope of China is significant. But China has bigger plans, as any country would. I laugh at a lot of experts who say, well, we're insulted that China would think that way. Well, what the hell do you think they're going to think? I mean, like any country would want. Like we would do it ourselves. We flex our muscles. I mean, you know, it's not written in the Constitution from God Almighty that we're always supposed to be the top number one superpower country in the universe, and that's it. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. And again, back to those dumb politicians who play to the next election, right? So now we have to look at, you know, what are they doing exactly? And again, I think Trump is a different character for a different time. He plays this thing out, and he plays it to win. And I think he's one of the first ones that plays more long-term strategy. Friends, any president who's willing to throw the markers down in a trade deal such as this, prior to a general election coming up, that's something different. That's playing more long-term game there. That's not a short-term game. He knows what's going on. And a lot of people would say that's silly. It's a dumb move by Trump. If he's just worried about the next election, if he's just looking to be elected, then why bother? Why do this at this point, you know? So the trade thing, you know, our trade 3-1. We're upside down backwards on the trade. It's 3-1, okay? I mean, you know. I remember growing up as a boy, everything said made in China. Everything about, take a look at your backpacks and your clothes and the little tags on those. Almost everything is made in China because we don't make any of that stuff here anymore. It's all made in China, friends. That's why all the manufacturing, all that was gutted out of here already. That's why you had a loss of jobs. You had an economic collapse here in a lot of ways over the past many years. And, of course, with the Obama doctrine, that certainly helped put that on steroids, didn't it now? You know. So the president comes out on February 24th, and he throws a tweet out there. And he says, I'm pleased to report that the U.S. has made substantial progress in our trade talks with China on important structural issues, including intellectual property protection. Yeah, really. Their technology transfer, agriculture, services, currency, and a whole ton of other issues. As a result, these are very productive talks, and he's going to delay the U.S. increase in tariffs. Now, this was back in February. They were scheduled for March 1st, so he delayed them with an idea they might, maybe he'll have a summit with President Xi, and they'll come to, you know, some sort of conclusion, and it looked like progress was happening. But the problem is the Chinese do this a lot, and they play the game all the way to the end. And then they change all the cards in the game. You don't really know what kind of hand you're holding at that point. So the president was optimistic back in February, but it didn't really pan that way. It didn't stay that way, people. It started to change a lot. And so, you know, so let's take a look at China today. That's the topic I want to talk to you about. And China is a different sort of country. the communist regime. They rule there with an iron fist. And yet, there's a lot of trade going on, and some people don't realize that, you just seen that they made China, Xi could be president for life if he wants the gig. You know, it's not America. It's not a representative republic, people. I mean, it's a different animal, China is. It's totally different. And there's a lot of power moves going on that China is seeking more world dominance. And, you know, again, as far as they're concerned, rightfully so. I mean, we don't have, and the point is, we're only as good as our last dance here. There, nobody says we're supposed to always be the number. We've got to watch out. We got to watch our backs. We got to plan for tomorrow. We got to plan. You're only as good as your last gig, people, you know. So the trade talks have everything going wild. The stock markets are going crazy. People are wondering what's going to happen with this China thing. In the meantime, you've got China. What's happening with China? You've got a massive military buildup happening with China. They're very much aware of what's happening. China, you know, again, a lot of the Chinese students are in our universities. They steal all of our technology. This has been their MO from the beginning, you know. And they're watching the 2020 election with great concern, people. They're watching because they see all the internal fighting in here in America, because they see our dumb politicians and what they're doing. And the politicians who don't really have America in its view. They don't really understand the stakes here. Of what's at stake here. So they're playing for the next election. And then you've got these far left radical Marxist socialist people, for a better word, who are running in this election. I mean, this campaign is just getting in, and you can see a lot of the way, and China's watching this. Of course, a lot of other people are watching it too. But we're talking about China today. They're watching this election with, they're looking to see if America stumbles. They're looking to see if Trump is going to be reappointed. Does he get another 4 years? Does that happen another term? Or do one of these far left radicals come in there? And of course, most of these people on the far left, they want to equal the playing field. They want America, you know, they use words like diversity and equality, which is pulling America down, of course, the open border syndrome, and they want everybody to be equal across the playing field, which, you know, it doesn't work that way. So it's all about diversity. I think diversity and equality are going to be the two biggest problems that America is going to have ahead. As the Chinese continue to play long-term strategy, they're looking back over their shoulder at America, and I really believe they're chuckling, because they see that they don't need to really, at this moment, fight America specifically. America will do it to themselves. It really is a cakewalk at this place, because we'll just self-destruct internally. It's all good. It's a match made in heaven as far as they're concerned. And, of course, the dumb politicians just continue on. And this has been coming on for a long time, people. It's been a long time coming. This is the Obama and the Bush and the Clinton and the Bush. This is last many, many years. This is the last 30 years of American politics. That's what's happening here. It's one after the next, after the next, after the next. And here we find. And then, of course, Trump comes along. Different kind of guy, again, for a different kind of a game. And people aren't really understanding. And now you see again, all these people are positioning for the election. You see, and you know, the front runner right now, Joe Biden, comes out and he says, you know, and he mocks everything. Of course, it's already starting with a war of words between him and Trump. He says, China's going to eat our lunch. Come on, man. Laughing like hell, you know. They're not bad folks, but guess what? They're not competition for us. Of course, you know, Joe Biden is never right on anything. He's not been right on any foreign policy. So I wouldn't put too much stake on what Joe Biden says, people. I mean, it's the same thing with Obama saying, you know, yeah, they're not a problem. And Russia's not a problem either. None of these people are a problem. Yeah, because they take America for granted. All these players, they take America for granted. But the point is, we the people cannot take America for granted. You out there cannot take America. I can't take America for granted, because as soon as we do that, we're done, because you can't rely on the dumb politicians. You got to remember that. That's the problem here. So China, U.S.-China relationship, American exceptionalism. I always like the words American exceptionalism. What does that mean? What does it mean? And what does China want in this whole game? That's the topic today, friends, on The Voice of a Nation.
Listen to Malcolm, The Voice of a Nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
The Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Glitcher News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Okay, friends, I'd like you to meet Baruch Plettner. Pleasure to have Baruch on. He's an entrepreneur, a scientist, an inventor, even a private pilot. Wow. He is passionate about education, the outdoors, and the war on globalism. And he's perfect for this conversation. He's the editor-in-chief of Zionism.com, and he's got an interesting piece up there about American exceptionalism. Baruch, it's so good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
So listen, on the setup on China here, so American exceptionalism, I don't think a lot of people are really understanding this or paying attention. Let's start with our internal politics, Baruch, because I don't think people truly understand that, you know, a country like China can really only be a threat to us when we allow them to be a threat, and all of the internal politics that are going on in America right now, which make really this 2020 election coming up really center stage for, I mean, I think you would agree with me potentially that all of our world players are watching this election with great concern and correct?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I think people in America kind of underestimate the kind of alarm with which serious people in the world like the Chinese are watching America and its descent into insanity. I mean, when you know, there's really no other word for it. Any society that starts placing, an exceptional weight on things that, for example, have to do with sexuality, whether it's transgenderism, homosexuality, abortion, all of that. These are things that usually are, if they're not self-understood or implied, they are not at the highest level of discourse in a normal society. But in America, they are right now. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, and people look, you know, people like the Chinese, they don't understand it. They look at this and they say, okay, America is the guarantor of stability in the world, on one hand. On the other hand, we have a country here that is descending into the pits of insanity, that is behaving, in ways that are so crazy that you cannot fathom it. Mm-hmm. And granted, they now have a president who, Trump, who seems to be acting like a normal politician, like a normal leader of a huge superpower should behave. But I think they're very concerned that Trump is, you know, stable, that will he be reelected? Does he represent the real America or do the crazies represent real America? And I think that's what the Chinese are really trying to figure out, because they're at the real fork in the road. If they believe that America is still a normal country, that America still behaves in a way that historically a superpower should behave, then there is one course of action for them. But if they believe that America is off its rocker, to use plain language, and is going to basically just pursue these insane policies and politics of identity politics, and as you mentioned, diversity, equality, all these words that either mean nothing at all or lead to revolutions and chaos like they've led in Russia 100 years ago, then they have another course of action that they have to pursue. And I think they really are uncertain what is going to happen? And that's a very dangerous point in time right now because of that.
And that's a great word to put out there, by the way. I like that, insanity. And also the word serious in the sense that the Chinese are very serious. So understand what we're saying here now. So we're talking China, very serious. They watch, and again, I think you would agree with me when I say they play the long-term game yes. very effectively. We don't, yes. correct?
Yeah, well, the thing is with China is, you know, they have 1.4 billion people to feed.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, imagine when you have like, you know, you have in your family, like you have a family with, I don't know, six children mm-hmm. or I don't, or something like that. You have to be serious. I think, you know, I think in the movie, The Godfather, the Marlon Brando playing that role, he said to Al Pacino, women and children have the luxury of being frivolous. Men have to be serious, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's very, very close. And that's exactly how the Chinese see it, you know, in their minds, you know, women and children can discuss things like, you know, who has what gender and who should be loving whom or not or whatever. But when it comes to feeding 1.4 billion people, you have to address serious policies because otherwise you're going to have outcomes that, you know, that are so bad. Famine, starvation, war, global war, deaths of millions and tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions. Mm-hmm. And you know, that is what they're thinking about. So of course it's a long-term game, but it's also just, you know, is America a serious partner for keeping the world away from those outcomes that nobody wants or is it not?
That's right. That's right. When you see the 2020 campaign right now, Baruch, and you see all of the candidates up to this point, there could be and probably will be more into the race, but you've got them, you know, de Blasio was just another one who got in here just in recent times here. But when you look at all of those players across the board, including Biden and Bernie Sanders and all of them and all of the California people, you got the whole constituent and they're just about and they're all running for president. If you compare them on a playing field with President Trump right now and you take a look at the hard line that Trump has taken with the president, and it's not accidental, people, that the president comes out consistently and says, and he's very good at this, I think you would agree with me, Baruch, when he says, yeah, I like Xi. Xi and I have a good relationship. We get That's along right. very well. He's so strategic in his nature when he's telling everybody, he's telling the world, and he's telling Xi. And he does this in the way he'll talk to foreign leaders through his open mic, through some of these meetings back and forth in a very, that takes a lot of art to do that. Not everybody can pull that off well.
No.
He just did that the other day talking to Kim Jong-un in North Korea. He did it through a mic. I think it was in Japan the other day. So you know what I'm saying? And so he does that effectively. But here we are with this president. If you take a look at him right now, can you think, a fair question, honest question, all of the candidates right now that are lining up on the left, can you visualize any single one of those candidates? Is there anyone that comes to your mind that you think could hold a hard line to an adversary like a China that Trump is doing right now? Does anyone come close to Trump?
Not at all. And there is more to be said here because, and this is where China has a real dilemma on its hand. And this is why Xi, when he recently made some remarks at the kind of the starting point of that long march, where basically in 1935 the Red Army managed to slip through and escape from Chiang Kai-shek's forces, and that's how they saved themselves. And later, 10 years later, they managed to win that civil war, but they were basically done for. It's just that they managed to escape all the way to northern China, to the Mongolian border. And that long march with all its sacrifices, basically it was a rout. It was a, you know, they were running away and from, you know, in defeat really. But that was also the turning point. And then they managed to win the war, but it was done through enormous sacrifice. And what she said in this strategic location, very carefully chosen, he told the Chinese that there's another long march coming, that they should prepare themselves for enormous sacrifice again. Mm-hmm. And where it comes from is from Xi's assessment that there is a strong possibility that Trump will not persevere in America. And if any one of those jokers that are trying to run against him gets elected, America will stop being a leader in the world, and that will plunge the world into chaos. And the only way for China to avoid all these horrendous outcomes that I mentioned previously would be to basically defeat America and take the leadership position away from it. So, you know, I would just add one thing. I used to spend a lot of time in the Far East, in Japan primarily, but it's a very Chinese-related culture, but also in China. And the way they see it is you're either a master or you're a vassal. You're a faithful servant. China is willing to be a faithful servant or play a second fiddle to a powerful America led by a powerful person like Trump. Mm-hmm. And they would be willing to do that because they judge themselves, at least at this point, to still be inferior, to still be not as powerful as America is if it's properly led by somebody like Trump.
Yeah.
But the moment one of those jokers who, you know, I don't want to say more words than that, but the moment one of them comes to power, that calculus is out the window. At that point, China feels like they have to take the reins and they have to save the world because otherwise it's going to be, you know, a free-for-all.
Yeah.
And that's just reality.
That is a very good analysis you say there. And by the way, I love your choice of words in the word joker as well. You do well. So I want to talk to you about something you wrote about in a recent article you have. And I want to talk specifically about the trade talks, because mm-hmm. I have said repeatedly that this whole thing, when the trade talks at the last minute changed because China mm-hmm. changed what Trump was on Twitter saying that it was, coming along really well, and he mm-hmm. thought we'd have an agreement any day. In fact, you heard that as well, Baruch. We all heard that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And we thought, oh boy, could this really be? Could this really, really be? Based on what President Trump was telling us, of course, he was taking the Chinese for their word at that point, and Xi for their word, which you can never really do at the end of the day. But here's the thing. I said repeatedly, it's going to come down to pride. The one thing the Chinese have a lot of is pride. And you cannot insult them because the relationship will be over. I mean, they have a lot of pride. Now, you wrote in your article, I want to read this to folks and have you comment about this. And you wrote the following. You said his decision, Xi's decision, so Xi Jinping we're speaking about, his decision to blow up the trade talks is not tactical. It is the most strategic decision that a world leader has made since Churchill's decision to defend Britain against Germany at all cost, or FDR's decision to retaliate for Pearl Harbor with an all-out war against Japan, or Hitler's decision to attack the USSR before consolidating his victory in the Battle of the Atlantic. Xi has considered carefully the benefits of bending the knee before Trump, swallowing his pride again in order to further consolidate China's gains in crucial technologies and complete the buildup of its naval and air forces to match those of the U.S. His comments were a clear statement that he has decided against this tactic and has now officially kicked off the open preparations for a showdown with the United States for global supremacy. Baruch, that paragraph got my attention that you wrote.
Yeah. And the reason I thought so was, there's a reason I think so, and then there is a reason why I think that he has embarked on that course of action. The reason I think that his decision to walk away from that tentative agreement on the trade talks, not as a matter of tactics, but as a matter of strategy, was precisely that his comments about the Long March. Because you cannot overestimate the importance of those comments, and you cannot overestimate the effect that they have on Chinese people, on regular Chinese folks. Because everybody in China is taught that mythology of the Great March from, you know, age 3 to through the end of university. It's in their DNA, because it's kind of the ethos, the founding ethos of, you know, China, of modern communist China. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when she stands there and he says, forget about all of that sacrifice. It's really all for nothing. Now we have to do it again from zero, he said, from zero. That's the important part, because China today is rather prosperous. It's more prosperous than it's been in centuries. So to tell the Chinese people that all that prosperity, all that sacrifice that they have incurred to this point in time is kind of just to buy a ticket to compete in the main event, and the real sacrifice is yet to come, that really caught my attention. Because, you know, I come from the old world. I was born in the Soviet Union and lived most of my life in Israel, and I'm kind of more like Chinese than American, in the sense that I am very attuned to those types of historical references. And he wouldn't have made them, and he wouldn't have gone to that province in China where the march had started to make them if he didn't mean it. And the other part of it is, why? Why did he decide that? And my, you know, here is my guess is that, in his opinion, and I think this is something that they researched deeply. This Chinese don't just, you know, impulsively, spontaneously jump to some sort of decision, especially not of this magnitude, or really any decision. But they have done some very, very deep dive into American, not only politics, but American public opinion trends and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that they have arrived at the conclusion that America is done for. Mm. That even if Trump is reelected in 2020, All that it will do is it will delay the inevitable, which is the destruction of America by about 4 years. Mm-hmm. They don't see anybody on the horizon who will succeed Trump, and you know, with the same kind of policies that will keep America great.
Yeah.
To use Trump's words, and what they see in America is, at least in their analysis, which I'm not saying is necessarily correct. But it's pretty unmistakable to me that they see in America substantially a corpse. Mm-hmm. And they see in the election of Trump kind of like the last shudder, the last breath that a dying, you know, if you think of like a dying dinosaur, mm-hmm. you know, a great beast that ruled the world for so long. And just before it dies, it gives this last shudder. It takes a last deep breath. That to them what Trump is. But they don't see more life in America beyond that. And that's why they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. You know, Baruch, I started this whole series of programs I've been doing here on The Voice of the Nation, talking about good versus evil in the world, if you will. And I talked about exactly what you're speaking about now in that 200 to 300 year mark. Where we're at right now, that really no great power gets by the 300-year mark in the history of humanity, humankind, you know. Mm-hmm. And we're at that pivotal point right now, which is not mm-hmm. lost. And I think about all the fools. This is really what you and I are saying today, is this has become a fool's game.
Yes.
You know, it's just a fool's game. Yes. And that's what you're saying. That's why I'm so connected with your thoughts here and what you're saying, because there's a good part of me, Baruch, that wants to tell you you're full of it, that you're wrong, that you're so full of it, that and I want to get in your face and do that right now and kind of, you know, really tell you you're full of you know what, okay?
Yeah.
But I can't do that, you know, you see, you know, can't do that. And because you just look at where all the cards are and all of this stuff. So the message to everybody out here, when you listen to this conversation, people, is you've got to understand what's playing out right now. This is so serious stuff. You know, Baruch, when we say we're at a historical moment of our existence, or we also say it's very strange right now. The world is very strange, Baruch. The politics are very strange. There's something going on. I think you will agree with me. There's a pit in our stomachs we can't quite describe this time. We haven't seen this before. We know in the past there's been problems, but we know we can get over them. But this time, we're not so sure, at least people who have, you know, a few brain cells who can figure this out. And the problem is we're fighting all of these forces that are coming against us, which you then begin to look at this thing with open eyes and say, wow, and like you're saying, how inevitable is this or not? Listen, I want to talk to you about the New World Order a moment. You said in this fascinating, you're a wonderful writer, a author. Thank here, by the way, you articulate your thoughts very well, very well. And you say here, very briefly, it says here this, and pay attention to this, folks. It says, it is clear that in Xi's mind, the enormous sacrifices that the Chinese people had made to overcome the historic humiliation they had suffered at the hands of white Europeans, be they English, American, or French, right, during the 19th and early 20th centuries, are only worth it if China defeats the West and emerges as the unquestioned, unassailable winner of the New World Order. Take a moment for everybody and let listeners hear from your viewpoint, please. What does this New World Order truly look like?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, it's not going to be anything that, you know, you and I and other freedom-loving Americans or any other freedom-loving people are going to really like, because it's going to be a Chinese world order. And in the Chinese world order, substantially, you do as you're told. And, you know, and you are born into certain circumstances, and maybe through lots of testing and very hard work, you can advance to better circumstances. But at the same time, there is no freedom. There, you know, you do what your current station in life affords you to do. You speak only what is allowed for you to say, and then you behave only in ways that are permitted for you to behave. Every single day you give thanks. I mean, literally, you say thank you to the great leader because, you know, you have what you have to eat and you have a roof over your head. And that's, you know, I guess the catchword for the New World Order is going to be something like Confucianism, or, you know, Confucius was this Chinese guy a couple thousand years ago. And his preaching was basically be obedient. And it's not a bad necessarily preaching. It's just deeply un-American. You know, because he says, listen, you know, respect your father and mother. That's great. We love that. That's one of the Ten Commandments, right? But then respect authority. Unquestionably. If somebody is your boss, you have to respect them no matter what. You know, and he says, do your part. Again, unquestionably, you have a part to play. You do your part. You don't question. You don't, you know, rebel. You don't invent anything better. It's not your job to invent anything better. It's not your job to offer a better way to do this or that thing. You do your thing and you say thank you and you go home to your family and you be a good father, mother, sister, brother, a son, daughter. And you know, is it a horrible New World Order? No, but it's just, again, very deeply un-American, because what are we used to as Americans, as even Israelis, as free people? We're used to navigating our own course in the world, aren't we? We're kind of used to, at least we want to believe that we are free agents, that, right, you know, within a broad framework of, yeah, the criminal laws, and, you know, we can do whatever we want, yeah, right? We can, yeah, question whoever we want. We can say whatever we want. And I know that recently there's been so many limitations placed on that. Mm-hmm. But if the world becomes a Chinese world, mm-hmm, we ain't seen nothing yet.
That's it.
In other words, you know, we will miss those big tech guys that are, you know, censoring us, because it's going to be a lot worse.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that may be, you know, what is coming. I just want to say one thing about, I don't know that China is right about America's demise, yes or no. For example, the Japanese in 1941 seriously miscalculated with that. Mm-hmm. They already tried, yeah, that gambit, you know, they mm-hmm thought that America was, yeah, back then. Mm-hmm. That it was weak, that Americans had no fighting spirit, that, yeah, you know, they could kind of sucker, yeah, punch America, and America would just say, oh, that's, well, it, let's talk about that. You know, mm-hmm, why do you do that? Let's discuss it. Instead, yeah, America went at them like, you know, nobody ever done before and laid waste to them.
Yeah, no, it's a great point to pull that up in 41 with the Japanese. It's a great point because we're just simply not paying attention is what is. And again, God loving Americans and people like you and I and our listeners listening. I mean, we don't want to take a chance. We don't want to gamble this away because,
no,
we kind of have our cake and can eat it too now, is what you were saying a moment ago here. We have it all. Yes. And we are. And, you know, we forget that a lot. We live in this country that is so magnificent. group, that there's only one America, and everybody knows that. And they all come here and they say, oh my God, this is like amazing, this place, you know?
Yes,
I hear that all the time from people, and there's nothing like America. And it's great to visit different countries. It's great to go see them, absolutely. But it's always nice to come home. Okay, there's something special about home, and there's something special about our streets and our people, and that you can, you know, do these things without looking over your shoulder, hopefully. Although in some urban markets now, in some urban cities, that's not the case anymore. And that's another thing I'm worried about, Baruch, that you and I should ahead talk about sometime. But it's really the urban cities in America, the great urban markets and cities in America, that are, we're rotten from the inside out is what's happening. And our cities are dying. They're dying across the board. And I'm very concerned with that, because American might just being, again, we're rotten from the inside out. We're like an apple that's been left out in the sun for far too long. And there's starting to be a stench with all of it badly. All right, let's talk about, in our moments here we have here, let's talk about the possibilities of common ground with China. And let's talk about what can possibly happen ahead that might be beneficial. Let me give you one example I want to mention to you, and I do want your opinion on this. The Chinese are, from what I can see in researching and understanding their culture and the background, they're also concerned with the growth of Islam and with Muslims, and they're having problems also.
For sure.
And
same thing
Russia is as well, by the way. Remember, the Muslim community is on a whole nother trajectory here. They also want world domination, you understand. And we cover that an awful lot on America Out Loud, without a doubt. But here's the thing. Isn't that a common ground that we could potentially use with China in some regard, do you think, Baruch?
Well, absolutely. Because, again, China's biggest enemy is chaos. this is really true. The way that this whole Confucian worldview is all about stability. It's about the opposite of chaos. It's about, you know, and you know, now we Americans think, well, Israelis especially, like, well, a little bit of chaos is not a bad thing, because it fosters innovation, creativity,
That kind
of stuff.
Absolutely.
But it has to be, you know, it's like a strong spice. It's like, I don't know, saffron or something like that. You don't want too much of that. You want a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now, China doesn't know how to put a little bit of it in. They're very scared of it. And that's why they're not great innovators. But, you know, because there's so much, they're so scared of chaos, they prefer total stability. Now, when they look at, Muslims, to them, and this is a correct assessment, to them, Muslims are agents of chaos. Agent, and chaos is destruction, chaos is death. And so, yes, there is common ground. So, you know, if the Chinese believed that Trump and his, you know, let's call it MAGA movement is for real,
right.
if they believed that it had staying power, and they may yet believe that because they're constantly reassessing, but if they believe that that movement, you know, is the movement that will lead America for the foreseeable future, they would be willing partners, and I would say even junior partners to America. Because that to them means that the world will be a stable world, and together we can fight off the forces of chaos, be it Islam or even Russia, because Russia lately has been rather chaotic. So, you know, so any kind of forces of chaos, of instability, and that's what Trump also understands. China and America have to be in the forefront of fighting the forces of instability, chaos, death in the world.
Yeah.
If they do it together, the world will do just fine. If not, we're in for a rough ride.
Yeah, that's very well said, Baruch. Very well said, buddy. And the Make America Great Again movement, these were the patriots. These are the people that you're seeing that got Trump in office. This is middle America. These are the people who really wanted to bring that manufacturing back and wanted to bring the spirit of America back. They wanted to bring patriotism back. They wanted to stand up at the football games. They don't want to kneel. That's what these people are. That's these folks, I'm telling you. And that, to me, is the new future, because for all intents and purposes, people, I'll tell you again right now, the Democrat Party is gone. They're dead. Party of JFK is history. And the party of Ronald Reagan also is changed as well. The Republican Party and the Democrat Party, for what you knew, are history. They're no longer. They just haven't changed the names yet, but they may at some point, because they've changed that dramatically. So you're probably going to see that ahead. And as Baruch says there, that anything could happen ahead here. The lesson in all of this is you've got to pay attention and you've got to get involved in the game here, because this is a game of life, and the game of this republic is no game. It's serious business, and world supremacy is at stake here. If America is exceptionalism, is going to be all of that. Friends, up next, our panel of voices will take and analyze the conversation on China and what happens next.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
I think we've laid out a very compelling case for you to consider China and consider what the stakes are. Let's get to our panel of voices here, please, and welcome on here Jim McKay. Jim is a political analyst and commentator, radio producer here. He has a 30-year background in global technology, telecommunications, and pharmaceuticals here. Arnetta Notkin, 30 years working on Wall Street, financial advisor, and she's a constitutional centrist. Good to have both of you here. And so I think the United States, or our will or desire to maintain a position of global leadership, is going to be pretty well come to an end, Jim. I think as we play this game of stupidity,
I think our politicians have given up on America. They speak of PC, political correctness. They speak of status quo. They speak of Me Too globalism. America isn't the bright, shining light any longer, that we don't have American exceptionalism. And with that kind of an attitude, running the country, which has become very evident in the last 20 years of a do-nothing Congress, a president for 8 years who was very content with a 1% economic growth. If we don't change, and if we don't go forward with President Trump's agenda with Make America Great Again, we're going to continue to slide down the tubes, and the Chinese and the Islamic nation will eat our lunch. Those are both societies that are thousands of years old. They're not. And when you think about it, Western civilization is 3 centuries old at the most.
This is a pivotal time. And it's not just the Chinese, but we've got the Russians. We've got, again, Islam itself. We've got a lot of factions here that we are up against as well. But the biggest faction we're up against is our own political leaders. It's our own internal thinking. And really, Arnetta, that's what's going to kill America is, you know, it's the struggle internally for power and greed and control that is playing out, that is killing us, sadly. And I think all the cheap talk that's out there isn't really accomplishing anything. It's just creating more and more of a divide. So what about this global leadership? And what did you think about the comments Baruch put out there?
I feel that Baruch's comments spelled it out and made it clearer than I've ever heard it made before. He has totally described what's going on, and with the progressives, the Chinese, Iran, and our own country. So the progressives look at, well, I'll call them globalists. They are assuming that China becomes the new world leader and that they will be able to work with them or control them. Again, it's like a lion tamer's entertainment in the circus when the lion turns and bites the trainer. They don't understand how China thinks. So we're up against, meaning we the people, the MAGA movement, we're up against all the odds. And we can't look to the GOP or the moderate Democrats or the independents, the libertarians, to bail us out this time. Because he raises an incredibly target-on, bullseye question. Does America still have its fighting spirit? The MAGA movement has it, but the MAGA movement also has to get out, be boots on the ground, or we are going to be under China domination world order. The progressives thinks they will be in charge of the Western world, but they don't understand the mentality.
Well, Arnetta, if you consider that it would only take a couple of small, really small, but big actions here. If something happens, let's say we have a casualty event here. Let's say the cards just happen to stack up. And, you know, we've got this problem. There are a lot of evil people in this country right now that have crossed over from our borders or that are here from other forms. A lot of terrorists, a lot of people that are planning their next 9/11, whatever that might be. Whatever it might be, they're planning it now. And these people play the long game. Every one of these people play the long game. We're the only ones, I think, on the planet who don't play the long game. I can't think of anyone else who does. That's how it is here because of the nature of these politics. And the politicians don't get it. They don't see clearly. So I think with all of that said, I think it makes for an interesting setup here. And, you know, President Trump is an unusual man for the times. But as he said, Jim, the Chinese may just be waiting for Trump to expire. I mean, even if he gets in 4 years, see, what they're looking at is the rotten core of America. They're seeing it rotten from the inside out because they see all of this stuff. They see what's happening out there. And they're aware that our politics are horrible as we make all the social issues the biggest problem we have of the day. They're laughing inside because they realize that these people that I don't even think they understand, and I'm not even sure they're globalists. I refer to them more as Marxists and communists. I don't even think they have the capacity, many of these people, to understand what globalists even means, Jim, honestly.
The one big point that Barack pointed out was that the Chinese have changed in the statement of last week from tactics to strategy. The tactics of setting up factories, growing industry, and everything, accumulated money, they're lending money to U.S. debt, some of the things, pure tactics, enriching their country, building their country. Now, strategic move, don't back President Trump any longer. Mm-hmm. Wait for the U.S. to implode from within. That's the path they're going down now.
I believe it's happening.
There will be no Chinese trade settlement.
You don't think it's going to happen, Jim? You don't think they'll come back? No.
Not any longer unless we go back and give away the farm.
Exactly.
And like you say, they play the long game.
Yeah.
18 months is not a long game from them. It's a
blink. Exactly. No, it doesn't mean anything. I think you're right. I hate to tell you, I'd like to disagree with you as well as I wanted to disagree with Baruch, but I can't disagree with you because, Arnetta, maybe you have a difference of opinion, but I don't think the Chinese are coming back easy on this trade deal right now. I think Trump is going to have his hands full.
No, I totally agree with Baruch on it. I don't think they're going to come back on it. I don't think there's going to be a trade agreement.
Wow. So you think that's that. And so mm-hmm. What happens next then is we're at the status quo right through the next election. Now, let's say this happens and 2020 happens, and let's say Trump is reelected. Then we have a better shot, you think, Jim, to get a deal with China then probably, or?
If we take a hard line, we have to continue a hard line with them. Yeah. It's the only thing that they understand, the only thing that Iran and other countries that are on the opposite side from we are understand. If you blink, they're going to take advantage.
That's it, buddy. That's it. That's it. Jim, you're so true. They're looking for our weakness, Jim, right? They're looking for our weakness. Just
a
blink.
Absolutely. And it's our own internal systems that are selling us out. I mean, we keep educating at our best universities scientists that return to China. How do you think they've gotten their technological advantage?
The recipe then for this, Jim, has to be there's a massive fight in front of us, and middle America is going to have to get their voices counted. This movement is going to have to grow in popularity. And as we say, we're going to have to pull the independents and the moderates that, Arnetta, you were just speaking about. We're going to have to pull them into this battle because if they can't see the majesty of America, and really maybe that's my message ahead, Arnetta. Maybe it's that we got to recapture the majesty of America, that American exceptionalism that we speak about so highly about, that pride and that can-do attitude that exists is why we've won what we've won. It's why we've done what we've done. It's why we've invented what we've invented. It's why we are what we are. It's innate in us. It's part of the DNA of this country, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and they do see our weakness, and our weakness right now is, you can call it craziness, you can call it dumb, but it isn't. These people that are espousing this message, mm-hmm. their masters are the ones that are the ones and have had a long time strategic plan.
Yeah, you really believe that?
I do.
You believe there are handlers involved for these people and everything, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know you say that. And I hear others say that too. I don't know that I completely believe all that. I think, in full disclosure, I do believe there are globalists that are trying to unite the whole world. I get that. But I think some of the people we're speaking about right now are too dumb. I don't think they even understand what that strategy means. And I mean that totally disrespectful, by the way, to those people, by the way, okay? So, and I really mean that. So I don't think they, their elevator goes that high, quite frankly. And so I'm not sure what all that means, but I know there are a lot of people who think there are handlers. Now, and beyond the handlers, I do think there are others as well that I think you do have some of the players that you hear we always say about Buffett and Soros and so many others of these big pocketed monies. And of course, Gates could fall into that company and many, many others people. And I mean, I get that. I get that thinking or that idea that there are people throwing money into it. And you have to shake your head and just wonder, what the hell do they want? I mean, why are they interested? I mean, it's hard for me to really grab this one. I have to tell you, really. Why would anybody want to dismantle this great nation? I mean, and whoever those people are, why don't we find the cancer and get rid of the cancer if that's what it takes? But what I'm looking for is a strategy. So we have an action plan, you know, rather than just cheap words. Everybody just talks cheap. There's so much cheap talk out there, man. You know, I just don't see where cheap talk is going to get us anywhere, people. I mean, we can talk about the issues yet and identify them as we've just done again on this program. But the action plan has to start with all of us. We've got to rally. We've got to rally this next generation. And that's got to come back again to the education plan and the education system. And that's got to come back to these elections. And that's got to come back to voting. And that's got to come back to that really believing in American exceptionalism. That is the recipe. That is the only recipe that's going to bring us through this whole thing. There is no other recipe, and there's no magic trick here, for friends. This is really, it's a lot of work. And for the rest of you that are out there just throwing, you know, your sarcasm out there and your hate speech and calling people names, and it's just a waste of time. It's just that world of politics, entertainment that a lot of you swim in. And I don't see the value of it. I mean, other than it gets you maybe high for the afternoon and you feel good, you got a little endorphin push, I'm not sure what else you get out of it. In the meantime, we're still going to hell in a handbag, you see? So maybe you ought to take your attention and your time and focus on the things we're talking about here. And that really becomes more of the movement. Maybe that would be a better use of all of our time, you think? And maybe put a better plan out there to know that these are serious problems we're talking about. You know, you just take a look at some of the conversation on America Out Loud and you have to know how serious this is. Whether we're talking about China, Russia, or Islam, or whatever the problem is, it's, you know, America. It's the majesty of America, the shining city we talk about all the time. This is really about it's the people of America. America, I told you before, is nothing without the people of America. Government doesn't mean crap, people. It means nothing. It's you and I out there. It's the people that make America. That's what America is. That's American might. It's American ability. It's American exceptionalism. It comes from you folks out there. It's we the people. That's where America comes from. There's only one America in that way. There's only going to be one America. There is no other America coming. There's not a second America coming anytime soon. This is it right now. It's right in front of you. And this is what you have to grab onto right at this very moment. And if you can't do that, then it's gone. My message to we the people, it's time to get involved and get loud.